Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Oyster. It's a pleasure to welcome Joan King, who's been intimately involved with Greenbelt for about 23 years, particularly with families and children. So she's going to be talking about that this afternoon. We're wondering if you wanted to come in a bit closer to make it a bit more of an intimate thing, because it might turn into more of a discussion, so then we can come around with the microphone. But I think it's also a chance for you to feedback, and so Joan will know what kind of questions that you have that she can respond to. But for now, I'm just handing over to Joan.
Well, hello, everyone. I recognise quite a few faces here. It's good to see you. And welcome to the folk I haven't met before. This afternoon's subject that is that F word again. I wish we could find a different word sometimes for family. And family as it relates to faith and so on. Because the word has certain connotations for people that's sometimes good and sometimes bad, and some people want to run away from the concepts of family that they've grown up with. It hasn't always been helpful. To others of it, it's been more helpful, and we've been able to embrace some of the past to take into the future with us. So this afternoon I want to open up the subject of family and family life, family today. What is family, what we mean by it, where families begin, where families end, if they end. And to look at that in relation to a little bit to church and society, and then out into the whole purpose of family. There must be a purpose for family in the kingdom of God, while we're working at living it down here on earth. So, as it's a family session, what I thought I'd do right at the very beginning is to get you just to turn to one or two people close to you, because in fact we are family, because we're brothers and sisters in Christ. And we're part of that great eschatological family that comes right down through the ages of all the saints, past, present and future. One great big cosmic family, if you like. So let's spend a few minutes just introducing yourself to each other. And very quickly, think about what you'd hope to get out of a session like this. And then I'll take some feedback and focus on what I say in those directions. All right? Is that okay? Just 3 or 4 minutes then. So if you're going to threes, you've got about a minute each for talking. Age of 15. So they were living with one parent and perhaps other members of a three-generation or four-generation family, or they may have been sharing a home with a brother or sister, but the child only had one birth parent. In 1820, 36% of marriages ended in under 20 years. All right, that's in 1820. Of course, the reasons for the ending of those marriages might be different from today, but somebody was left with the family, and with the job of the lone parent. Okay. In 1906, there were the same percentage of elderly people in poor law institutions as there are now in residential care. The same proportion. And what happened was that the Victorian Church didn't like all that, didn't like the facts. that of what was happening. And so the Victorian church, the high, low, and the reformed, worked together and put effort into the promotion of family life, the defining of family values, and they wanted to have some control over what was happening in society. It was only in 1753, for instance, that the church had taken, had linked up with the government, as it were, and laws had been put around marriage to regularise marriage. Before that, people used to jump over a stream or over a twig, didn't they? And they had to give a sign that their marriage had taken place by having smoke coming out of the chimney the next morning. Now, that's all quite in historical terms, that is all quite recent. And yet here we are thinking that it's been 2.4 children forever. And what we see happening, you know, it's devastating. Well, of course, pain, where there is pain and unhappiness, that is devastating. But I just wanted at the beginning to see it in global, you know, bigger terms, as it were. So as we come to look at this subject, in some ways, we're facing similar questions to the Victorians, but our times have changed. And in some ways, what the Victorians did was to put onto the family all sorts of tasks that that became quite onerous and oppressive for some people. The whole idea of some of the duty that took place at the expense of some other people and so on. So we have to work it out in our times, but don't let's think that things are so much worse. They're just different. We're in a different situation where we now have a situation where women, for instance, are hopefully more equal in society than they were, equal with men in society than they were 100 years ago. And so we have questions of work-life balance, which is what some of what you're saying are relating to. We also proportionately have fewer children in society, and that in itself puts greater pressure on children. Because if you've only got one or two children in the home, all the focus and the pressure is in one or two, whereas in my parents' generation, it was shared across a bigger number. Okay, so what parents put into one or two children was shared across more. And it can, of course, be a good thing, but it can also, again, create pressures. So we're in a place now where there are proportionately fewer children, where attitudes to children are different. Most people becoming parents for the first time have not handled a baby before they become a parent. We're in a situation where, in order to have a home, at least, parents have to do the economics before they can work out whether to have a child or not, whether mum can actually be off work or dad. It's most often mum, though, isn't it? During that 6 months or whatever she might need off, and how to work out that balance of keeping going in the workplace, in the career, in the using the gifts, the education and so on that's been received. And so one of the major tasks I think that we need to be working at is the task of enabling one another to make transitions in our family lives. Because family is always dynamic. You think you've pinned it down. You think you know who belongs to your family and what your family is. And then next week something happens. You know, the children have changed. They're two sizes bigger in shoes or something. The requests from school are different. The people involved are different. Somebody moves away. Jobs change. Family is dynamic. And yet we know that throughout the life cycle, there are going to be specific milestones that our children will achieve within a range of norms. For most children, they will achieve similar milestones. Knowing what these are can be a great help. Knowing a little and not enough can be hard because it can cause worry, not having enough information. But having some knowledge of the major transitions that are milestones that children will meet and the transitions that they will have to make can help parents. But it's not only about knowing about children and what they're going to face, it's about knowing ourselves as adults. How are we going to meet the milestones that we have to meet? On Thursday, I was at a funeral. Hit me quite hard at one level because two of my cousins have died in the last month and they are my generation. That puts me as one of the oldest in my four-generation family. And so our family changed in the last month quite considerably. My cousin's husband had said to me when he was caring for her, I was checking out how much support he had, he said, "I'm a bit of a loner." They've obviously got some friends. He said, "I don't need an awful lot of support." On the day of the funeral, I went for a walk with him. And he said, "I've learnt something." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I could be a loner as long as Mabel was always there when I got home. I can't be a loner." And so that was a big lesson for him on the day of his wife's funeral. And I think it's a big lesson for all of us that we need to shout out in our society that nobody can be a loner. And the individualism that we're being forced into so much of the time is actually unhealthy. We're born in the image of a relating God who is Father, Son, and Spirit. And because we are born in the image of a relating God, we need other people to varying degrees in our lives and in the closest way in family. And that means that family has a special function within church and within the wider community, because it's within family that we experience relationships quite closely and can mirror within a well-relating family something of the image of God. God in relationships is seen and experienced in family. And I think that's a big thing for us to take on board. Of course, our families are fallen communities, fallen little churches that need to be networked into bigger church and so on. And so we're always living with the tensions. The tension between being, as Christians, the tension between being in the kingdom-related family, which is a faith-related family, and the kinship-related family, which is based on the bloodline and on covenant and faithfulness. And we will always struggle with family because we're walking that tightrope between the two and aiming, hopefully, to experience both in our homes, to be a kingdom community related through faith and a human family that's also related through genes, through promise and commitment and faithfulness. And so it's this tension that we work with all the time, recognizing that we're all fallen human beings. And just as people are close to us, and through that we experience love, when we are hurting, it's those who are closest to us that we hurt most. And so we've got this thing going on in our families all the time. Now, when it comes to parenting, and I want to focus on that for a little while, if I may, because of the questions that have come. I don't think that parents are expected in Scripture to parent their children alone. I think that we get skewed pictures from our Christmas cards and from some of the stories we're told in Sunday school and the like. For years, I lived with an image of Jesus with Mary and Joseph, who was his sort of dad, as I came to realize it. At the time, I got really confused as a child myself. But I ended up with this image of a nice little nuclear family, which was the Holy Family. But if we read Scripture in context, we see that Mary and Joseph were connected. And they were connected into their wider community, which they would call family. Family included 50 to 100 people living in different households. That's how people lived. It included those who might be your slaves or your workers or your clients. That was normal. That was the family that Jesus was born into. A connected family. So that when he, when they all travelled up to Jerusalem when he was 12 years old, they weren't being negligent parents, letting him run off and find his own way. There was a community aspect to the care, looking out for one another's children, sharing resources. And so on. They were connected. They were not isolated. And nowhere in Scripture do I find anything that says that two parents have alone to provide for all their needs of their children. The bringing up of children is a community activity. I'm a single person, but I've helped bring up lots of children, I think, including some of them at Greenbelt, who would meet up, you know, for over 20 years. And they're adults, and there's a connection there. The thing is that the pressures are such that what is communicated is that parents have the responsibility for their children. And it's onerous in this day and age. I spoke to a mother a while ago, or years ago now, who said that what changed her ability to be a parent was when she was helped to see that her child was not a responsibility, but was a person. And I think one of the things that perhaps we need to do is to try quietly to think about what sort of images do we work with. When we think of ourselves as parents, or as aunties or uncles or whatever, what are the images of our children and of ourselves that we live and work with? When Greenbelt started years ago, no children went to the communion service. They were all inside the children's area. Parents didn't like going to the children's area. They wanted to be rid of their children on the whole. Not all of them, but on the whole. Because children were needed to be separate from parents. Now we know that the shared activity is invaluable. Yes, we all need our personal space, but shared activity is invaluable. And that the ways in which children are allowed to flourish spiritually, as well as in every other way, include being involved. It's about faithing, not schooling. And for years and years and years, one of the images that the Christian church has worked with and parents have worked with is the disciplining and schooling of children. There will be something of that in the role of a parent, but basically, I spoke about this last year, parents are icons of Christ, or icons of God and the Godhead. They reveal to children something of God just by the fact that they are loving, caring parents. If children are loved, they learn that they are loved, that they have value, that they have worth. If children are affirmed and cherished and nurtured within appropriate boundaries in child development terms, they will learn that they are okay people. If they are relating to their parents and their parents' friends and the folk in the church, then children will feel safe. And a safe child is able to trust. A child who has good attachments with other people, going first with the parents and then beyond that to the childminder, to the nursery worker, to playgroup leader, school teacher, whoever, to the extended family, that child will be able to trust. A child who is able to trust is able to grow more healthily in faith and to grow more holistically. So the value of supporting parents in their parenting cannot be underestimated. I am absolutely convinced of this, to the extent that I am now spending most of my time in, first of all, working. I've been doing some work with the Mothers Union, which is an international Anglican organisation. It has a bit of an old-fashioned image here, but it's actually doing some fantastic work across the world in the whole area of parenting. And one of the things that we've been doing is getting the work recognised and accredited so that Christian people can be involved in these things in a way that the rest of the world will see as valuable, because they will see the accreditation as being worthwhile. And so we've been working at helping to do people to learn to work with groups of parents. And I'm currently writing handbooks for some courses for the Parenting Education and Support Forum, which is a national body, piece of work that's being funded by the government, to help in the whole area of enabling people to support parents, either individually or in the home. What I long to see is parenting and parenting groups taken as the norm. not as something that's just remedial, but something that is normal and necessary, that friendship groups are formed, that people, as they undergo the transitions that their children are undergoing at various stages of their lives, have support in handling themselves and their children through those transitions. Now, if a local church begins to take parenting seriously, I believe that what they will see is that by working at the in the area of parenting, they are helping all children to have a better deal, to know, to support parents in loving their children in ways that provide an experience of the attributes of God. Because that's what parenting is about. And children who are growing up healthily are going to be children who are more able to take their place in the world and love themselves, love other people, and love God. And as we do that, I believe that parents themselves are refined and honed, challenged in their faith, and they grow too. I think taking that even further, we live in a society where there are many people who are unable to have children, increasing numbers of them. I know that developments in medical ethics are going to make it possible for more people to have children who want them. And so the NHS, if last week's news was to be believed. But there are many people who don't have children. There are many people who are single. There are increasing numbers of older people. The family that we belong to, which is the communion of saints, includes all generations. And they can help and support parents in this whole thing of bringing up children. Having said that, they themselves need the spin-off of belonging. They need to know that they have equal value in the Christian community as parents with children. Our value doesn't come through our being parents. Or not having parents, or not being parents, I mean. There's no greater value. And there has been historically, in recent history, an alienation of people in churches to the family service or the family this or that because it has sounded exclusive rather than inclusive. I think we're in a position where churches can demonstrate what it means to be inclusive of all people, including children of any age and adults of any age. If churches are able to take that on board, and in terms of mission and ministry, do some serious planning around their local demography, then I believe that all sorts of families can be supported and the church's activity can be in partnership with others. It can be specifically relating to the needs and the whatever the local community represents, what is there, the sorts of families that are there, the issues facing parents are there. There are all sorts of roles that the church, through its people, can have. I do know that the government are looking to the voluntary sector to enable parents to have a better deal. I know that they are worried about parenting, perhaps for different reasons from us, but in a sense, who cares? As long as they will support us in what we might do. Rosie Boycott, who is the minister for the family, said at a meeting that I was at not long ago that they were going to be putting more money and effort into parenting to enable parents with the job of bringing up their children. They were putting children first. And they're looking to the voluntary sector to help them with that. Now, I know that that brings all sorts of problems. We have to pay our mortgages as much as anybody else. So we can't just put, you know, have people to hand to do all this work. But there are some things that we can do. Each church has to work it out for itself. But one is to be in touch with what government is saying and doing. And to work as an advocate. You know, we worked in 1974. A group of us met and we together founded Churches Together for Families as part of Churches Together in this country. And out of some of our campaigning in 1994, we now hear that phrase, family-friendly workplace, being bandied around, family-friendly churches, and so on. That was a step forward, partly in answer to your question. But there's a lot more that can be done. The advocacy role of the local church is important. Knowing where the help can be is important. Often we're at the first port of call. So I've been talking for ages. I'm going to be quiet in a moment. But I just want to say one or two things about the world of children that you're parenting in. And that is, I believe that while it's a pressurised job being a parent, paying the mortgage and keeping the careers going, it's a pressurised job. It's a worthwhile job. Our children, I believe, are living in more and more pressurised times. And one of the challenges, I think, for the church and for parents and the wider family of the church is in the area of how do we help children to develop their values. You can help them to know which stage they're at school, how well they're doing at key stage, this or that. But how are they doing in their learning and understanding about the world and the values that we hold? This afternoon I watched hundreds of children marching with their banners in the carnival, and it was wonderful. But was it to them any more than just being in a big crowd and having some fun? That's a good enough reason for doing it, for children. But without the conversation around the breakfast table or around the campfire or wherever, without the, this is why we're doing it as parents, as families, there are reasons for it, and chatting about it, without the conversation and the communication skills, children won't necessarily embrace some of the values. So my challenge is, well, whether we like it or not, we are conveyors of values to children. They are absorbing what we live, what we are, who we are, and they will make their choices as they grow up, but we will have influenced them. Paul Cookson's written quite a number of poems. Awesome. No, it's down here. And I had looked up a couple. And there's one short one that I'll read to you just to end. Or two short ones that remind me of what it's like for children today. One's called All the Girls. All the girls gang up on Jane just because she's not the same. Her trainers are too cheap and plain. So all the girls gang up on Jane. Our children are living with terrific pressures on them, even down to the trainers that they wear and the labels that they wear. I wonder what response they'll get to the Greenbelt label when they go home in their T-shirts and with their bibs and so on. Are we just colluding? And then there was another one that I wanted to read. And this is the end of what I'm going to say, and you can come back at me. Why parents are bonkers. Wide awake, late at night, I'm playing out and it's still late. What do Mum and Dad do? They make me go to bed. In the morning, fast asleep, comatosed and in a heap. What do Mum and Dad do? They get me up instead. You're never going to be a winner at one level with your children. But they are going to take you on a faith journey as a parent. Because they keep challenging you and they challenge you to change. They are agents of the kingdom enabling you to grow. Just as you are an agent of the kingdom enabling them to grow. Now, I've tried to touch on the questions that came up. If I haven't done so enough, I have resources and things that I can point people in the direction of. But if there are any questions, please just indicate, or anything that you just want to contribute.
I just wondered if you could expand on what you were saying about the labels thing. How do we help our children to, if they're in that position, how do we help them to stand up for themselves and to speak back to their friends about it?
How do we help children who are in the position of being pressurised over consumerism and issues like that? Some of you might have more experience of this and have things to say. Please indicate if you want to. I can kick off, though. I think a lot of it, I think sometimes we do have to, in quotes, give in for the sake of the child in the peer group. Sometimes, as long as it's not way out. That comes off for me, my own experience when I was young, of telling peers I was going, that I loved Jesus and I was going to be a missionary. And I was so taunted and teased that through my teenage years I clammed up and didn't share anything with them because I was so hurt by what happened. So I think we do have to be very sensitive and careful. But I think if children are brought up in a communicating family and are given decisions to make from the very beginning, decisions that are appropriate for them at their age, starting with, well, you can have a new you need a new T-shirt, and it can be red, blue or green, and they choose the colour. That's appropriate choice. If you begin by reasoning with them, keeping the boundaries about costs and so on, then they can take on board the bigger decisions that have to be made, like, well, we can go to Greenbelt this year or we can go for a week by the sea. We've got this amount of money. How will we share it out? What will we do? Consensus, practicing consensus decision making in the home. It takes time. But if we can't avoid World War III in the home, we're not going to have much chance in the big wide world. It's about being part of a communicating family, talking about why we think it's important to have cheaper trainers or whatever, I think. Any more questions?
Is this working? Yeah. We're a childless couple, and in the church we are very much marginalised.
We're not a family in a lot of people's eyes, even though we've actually been married longer than a lot of people with children who are no longer married. They're treated more as a family than we are. And it's happening everywhere throughout community, so it does get reflected in the church, and you have family things. But what I find really interesting is that it's a resource that's wasted. Children actually gravitate to us because they're not competing with another child. They get 100% attention. And some people like it, some people don't. But I just think that we're wasting. It's not an uncommon thing. One in six, it's actually more like one in four or five now, couples are infertile. That doesn't even take in the single people. So you're probably talking more than 50% of the population without children. And it's just a totally wasted resource. And it would help so many people. You know, there's got to be a solution out there for the use of this resource that's just going down the gurgler, really.
Yes, people are queuing up, in a sense, to help, to relate with children and to be there for folk.
I love what you were saying at the beginning about looking on children not as a responsibility, but just as a person. Wondered if you got any experience or helpful ideas that sort of works within our church family and families within the church, but in our community, you know, sort of like I run a mother and toddler group, the parents, the mothers, it's usually the mothers I see, they're so terrified of that responsibility, they're so untrusting of anything from outside, that whatever their problems and needs, it's so hard for them to express them or to, you know, let themselves reach out to any help that there might be. You got any help on that?
I can identify with your situation because I meet it time and time again with people who are saying these folk would really grow in confidence if, you know. I think if we can build friendships in our churches with our neighbours and so on, that there are a lot of people who are unclubbable and ungroupable, who and some of them have had a bad experience of the education system, and others come just because of their personalities or whatever, aren't happy in groups, although they want friends. And sometimes people need facilitating one-to-one, supporting one-to-one. A lot of new parents, for instance, may have their own parents living hundreds of miles away, and they need somebody close by just to be there as a sounding board. So I think it is quite hard, but what I've got to say is that attitudes are changing, I think, as more and more people are setting up self-help parenting support groups. And I think one way in through the parent and toddler group is through friendship and seeing it in the long term. They might be there for the sake of the toddler, but how about us having a cup of coffee together and watching this video and having a chat about it? And it may be that they won't go to a regular group, but from time to time. I've seen that work. Any other questions or ideas, things you'd like to share?
I'm just going backwards to the last point about a couple who said she was childless. I think that's wonderful that you're able to say that, because I know that my sister is unable to have a baby and she's devastated. And you need to sort of know who is there and who would love to have the children around her, but she couldn't cope with it at this stage. So,
thank you. Yes, I think we have to be ready for that. Some people want children around, some people don't, and they can change over the years. So it's important to look at the individuals, not pressurise one way or the other. But can I just say, if we have a view of the family that is related through through God, then all of us belong to that. And it's not about the form of family. I think God is more interested in the relationships in our groupings rather than in the form of our family.
I won't be long. The church I go to, and I'm sure there are others that are the same, we have kinship groups, and they consist rather like an extended family of all different ages, and we relate to each other as we get to know each other better as families. And then the kinship groups all meet in church on a Sunday and worship together. It's the Vineyard Church, in case you wonder.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And some churches are working at the whole idea of family clusters, which embraces not just the kinship group. It's like the extended house group that involves the children of the house group members as well. Mm.
I think also being a member of a church can also make it more difficult being a parent, because they have very high expectations. If you go to church, even members of the church expect your children to be little angels and a two-year-old to be able to sit still for an hour. And I think sometimes it's harder being a member of the church and you don't get the increased support, you get increased pressures on you.
That's very sad when that happens. And I know it happens in lots of churches. I once did a little mini survey of people who felt alienated in church services and found that everybody did. The children were alienated because they were being made to sit still unnaturally. The parents were alienated because they felt that people were watching them and their parenting skills and what their children were and weren't doing. The older folk were alienated because it was all arranged for the younger folk, and so on and so on, and it just went on like that. I think we have to work at changing our perceptions of what worship is and what people can and can't do in the hour that they can worship together. I think that it's absolutely vital that churches concentrate on people relating with each other, including adults relating with children and vice versa, and the young people. Let's forget them. And I think the changes come about outside of worship. I think they come about by having fun together. And I've told this story before at Greenbelt, but it was a very powerful one, where I belonged to a church where there was someone who couldn't stand children moving about in the service until they moved the coffee right into the church for the end of services, so that it came into the pews and people milling around. And in that process, she was introduced to some of the children. And also, it was a church that had infant baptism. They brought the pulpit in amongst the pews. And the baby was introduced to all the congregation. And this woman, who'd gone to church all her life, I heard her say one day when this little girl was, she was at the toddling stage, she said, "Isn't she clever? She's learned to climb this week." And she climbed up into the pulpit, actually. But instead of criticising, suddenly she was noticing the person and the person's achievements as she developed. Attitudes are only changed if people meet. And that means that children and adults have to meet beyond their parents. Yeah.
Thanks, Jo. I think I have to stop there, I'm afraid. Yeah. Are you going to be around if people want to talk to you for a few minutes? Brilliant. Thank you.